Hi, I'm Cheryl the Hoser, and I want to promote a fabulous basket that I brought, and I think I put it on the wrong table. So buy tickets for it. It's a sin basket. It has fine wine, coffee, normal underwear. It's chock full of good things. I went to my bookstore and I said, what would be appropriate? And they came up with this book, The Deviant's Pocket Guide to Outlandish Sexual Desires Barely Contained in Your Subconscious. Enjoy. And how many of you have been shunned or mistreated when you left the church? It really hurts me when people lose their friends and their family, but I want to let you know you'll survive, and I want you to know at least I'm proud of you. So take care.
I'm Ray Messagey, Olympia, Washington. This is our first time here, and thank you for inviting us. My wife Sharon and I married in the Longan Temple 52 years ago. Graduated from BYU, degrees in psychology, astronomy, and religion. Now that'll make anyone schizophrenic. And so we'll tend to show that. Yes, our family split almost in two. We have a grandson that is with us tonight that we flew in from Orlando, his mother is not, our daughter is not speaking to us right now and not speaking to him. So we have a grandfather and a grandson who are compatible, and the generation in between not speaking. We had missionaries live in our home for 15 years. We've held many, many positions in the church. When I was an elders quorum president, I sat on many excommunication boards and bishops' courts, and feel a little bad about that, because I contributed at times to what I believe is a real problem in some of the families today. When I was first baptized, my wife was born in the church and raised here in Utah. My bishop said, as they all told you, humble yourself, pray to God, and you're going to get the right answer. And I did, and I would have given my life for it. Ended up in the service during the Korean conflict, Fairbanks, Alaska, responsible for a Nike site with that missile aimed at Moscow. And the only church was the reorganized church, the one that attended for 21 months. And Emma Smith and her son, 11-year-old, continued on reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. They believe in the Book of Mormon. The only really distinct difference is they don't believe Joseph Smith practiced polygamy. He told me if I went out, and I did, in a snowbank about 3 miles from Fairbanks and prayed for 7 hours, and I got the answer. Indeed, he was right. My bishop back home had abandoned me. And the reorganized church was the true church. As I'm getting discharged from the service, I meet my wife, and she says, by the way, I come from a polygamous family, and your brother-in-law is the prophet, seer, and revelator of the largest polygamous group in the nation. They own their own town, so we were able to go there. We were able to live with them. One night when we're playing pinochle, he says, Ray, if you'll really humble yourself, the Holy Ghost is going to tell you that I'm right. That did it. The Holy Ghost had fooled me once, fooled me twice, not three times. My wife and I decided to go on a 50-year quest for historical knowledge, and what we have would be that high. If you've written a book, we've read it. If anyone wrote a letter in the early church, we've read it. If you put anything on the internet, we've probably read it. and finally decided that we could no longer justify if there is a God in heaven, and as we look into the universe and see the laws that govern the universe, we still tend to believe that there is a controlling influence. We know nothing more than that. It seems logical to us. So organized churches have no meaning for us anymore. And it comes as quite a shock after 52 years to have to go through that. Missionaries lived in our home for 15 years, and we assisted them. We have two of our boys went on missions, and two of our grandkids. So it hurts, and many people in the family are not speaking with us now, and many of the friends that we had over the years. But at least we're together, we think alike, and we'll survive it. And that's exactly why we're here tonight, and thank you for inviting us.
Hi, I'm Andrew Callahan, and thank you. I guess some of you know who I am. I'm also known as Flatlander, and I've been involved, I guess most of you probably are aware, I've been involved in the website called Signing for Something. Andy Duncan, who's here, was actually the person who started the whole idea, and some other people on Postmo, and we started a website called Signing for Something. The idea behind that website is that some of us are of the opinion that the church leadership doesn't really listen to the members. I don't know if you've experienced that. But some of us thought, you know, this thing that they're doing with gay marriage in California is probably not really right. This bigotry thing, God might not really be a bigot. This might just be men being bigots instead of God being the bigot, as the leaders of the church are telling us. So we're going to allow people to speak out and sign letters, and we then put up a petition, write letters, and then they put up a petition also on the website. Today, we came, because today I was going to be here for this, some very generous person bought my airfare to bring me out here, and I'm very happy to be able to come because of that. We decided that today would be a good day for us to deliver the letters and the petition to the church office building. And the story is very simple, almost. Peter Danzig and Mary Danzig contacted church headquarters. They talked with a couple of different people. We'd like to bring the letters by and drop them off at the front desk. No, you can't do that. We will not accept them. Please don't come. Okay, so we had announced that we were coming and told people. Yesterday, I'm on my way to the airport to come out here, and the AP reporter says to me, "So what are you going to do?" I said, "Well, I don't know. I mean, security might be there to chase us off, and they might not accept it." Well, she put that in her story yesterday in the AP, and she also called church headquarters and asked them. They said, "Oh, no, no, he must have misunderstood." "We'll meet him at the north door. We're happy to have them come." And they put out their own press release too. So we showed up today. There was about 50 people, including about a dozen children. We had 15 packets about 2 inches thick with letters written by people from all over the world, signing their opinion that the church should butt out of the Proposition 8 issue in California. We had petitions signed by over 600 members, 600 people, maybe members, maybe not, telling the church to butt out. And we also delivered 200 carnations to them today, with the idea that the flowers represented lives that have been lost in the Mormon church by people who have been gay or lesbian and have been injured or killed or taken their own lives because of the persecution. It's actually a very serious problem. The church is wrong on this. I mean, they're hurting people. They're hurting families. And so we really wanted to get them to listen to us. Today, there were 4 television stations, 2 newspapers, 1 radio station, and the Associated Press there when we delivered the stuff. And they ate it up, folks. They were taking our pictures, and we had these little children bringing flowers up and dropping them. And so it should be on the news tonight. I hope you get a chance to look at it or to check the websites of the local TV stations and so forth. But it went very, very well. Thank you. We're going to continue to accept signatures and continue to accept letters. And at a future yet-to-be-determined date, we will also submit the new total signature on the petition to the church, and we'll also send the new letters that we receive after today to the church. We're serious about this because they need to listen. Chad said he wanted to be there, but he told me he overslept. It was at 2 o'clock today, Chad. Thanks for oversleeping. But I'm picking on him. But it's real. There are real people's lives affected here, and we are trying to do something to get them to listen. I don't know if they'll ever listen. I don't know if they'll ever change. But it's important because, you know, I guess Chad said he's not really a traditional Mormon. Someone yesterday told me that I didn't look like a traditional high priest. I don't know. I'm a high priest, okay? I still wear the garments. But we're trying to foster change. Please continue to speak out. Hundreds of people have had the courage to sign the petition, to write a letter. Other people have actually told us today, I've actually spoken with people face to face today since I've been in Utah, where people said, we support you, but we're afraid. We are intimidated. There will be repercussions if we speak out. That's another of the things we need to change in the church. Please be courageous. Please help us to continue to speak out. And as Chad suggested, you know, obviously this one issue I'm really excited about. There are lots of other important issues. Please continue to speak out so that our voices can be heard. Thank you.
I'm going to come up here and steal the mic because I don't like podiums. Hi there, I'm Jamie. It almost kind of feels like an AA meeting, you know, just a little bit. I'm 17. I think I'm the youngest one here, if anybody's got me beat. I am. And being here really made me realize how blessed I have been because I got out when I was 13. I've had 4 full years of becoming normal and gaining my freedom and personal power, and it has been such an inspiring journey. I'm not kidding. Oh my gosh, it's just overwhelming. My mom left the church, and along with that, her marriage. And so I just kind of hopped on the bandwagon and found out for myself, you know, how different it can be. And just being here and seeing all of your beautiful faces and how diverse everyone is, I just want to say I am so proud of every single one of you. We've given up. You've faced so many sacrifices with your family, your friends, your beliefs, your work, everything. You've faced so much. And just think of what a strong and powerful, wonderful person you are, and just seeing how many people have come together because of this, you will never stop inspiring me. So I want to thank every one of you for being here today, and that's it. Thank you.
I'm not going to speak. I'm just going to leave this mic up here. Pulling it out of there is making the sound screw up on our recording, so we're going to leave this here instead. I don't have anything to say.
Appropriate. My name is Bonnie Seifert, and Steve is my husband, and this is our second year here, and we're from Minnesota. Last year was our first time, and I was in the middle of, you know, leaving, and so the whole time I just cried the whole time. But we've had a 3-year journey, and my husband started it, and there's nobody in Minnesota to talk to. So I ended up on the website, and I emailed Bob McHugh, and he was so nice. He kind of gave some guidance what to do, and so I did it. I ended up in counseling for a year, and I even had to go on medication. I mean, so if anybody's going through that, just don't worry about it, because it helps. And I had two wonderful counselors. And my first one, she told me 2 months after I was into it, she says, "Honey, don't you know that we're deprogramming you from a cult?" And, you know, but anyway, I mean, life is good now. And my husband, it was one of my converts on my mission. And so... but we... He's a good guy, believe me. But we have 4 children, and 3 of our children have left. And one of the things that when my son, he served a mission down in Brazil, and he's always been like a healthy skeptic. And he was down there, and he would tell us stories about how the missionaries are always going out and going out on dates and everything. And by the way, my son did tell his mission president to F off. All right. Yeah, he did. And he came home, though, and he tried to go to church because my husband and I put pressure on him, you know, because we wanted him to have a temple marriage. We wanted this and that. And we almost severed the relationship with him. It was, you know, because we were so adamant. And then one day when we started going through all this, my husband and I were doubting it. And my daughter, my only daughter that's in the church, she's married to a young man that his family's, he's the father-in-law is a stake president in Idaho, Blackfoot. And anyway, they were teasing about him on the phone one day because Stephen's a little abstract, you know. But anyway, they started saying that Stephen didn't know what he was talking about. And that was the first time I was able to defend my son. And I said, "Don't judge until you know the facts." But, you know, the research that we've done in the last 2 years has been eye-opening. And our ward back in Austin, Minnesota, they completely shunned us. They wouldn't have anything to do with us. We would be in a restaurant and their children would wave to us and they would walk by and just totally ignore us. It was, I mean, that was the hardest thing. And then one more thing I'll tell you is over the past couple of years, my final thing to say goodbye to the church was I was going to write the prophet a letter, which I'm sure many people have done. Anyway, I've written a dozen of them and I've never mailed them. So the last one I wrote 3 weeks ago, and it was a really nice letter. And I asked him if he would come to the ex-Mormon conference. And then I never got a response. I knew I wouldn't. I said in the letter, I said, "You know, you probably won't write to me. You'll probably throw it in the trash." But it made me feel better. But he never responded, so I knew what my answer was. But anyway, you know, if people are going through this, the one thing I found on the internet, I have 2 minutes left, is there's somebody that they need to be able to talk with people more personally. And, you know, that's the one thing I tried to do, but I don't know if I wasn't doing it right or whatever. But, you know, I even went into postmormon.org and I said that I would, you know, be willing to talk with people, but you never hear from that because I know there's people that they hurt so bad inside like I did. And so if there was some way that we could get something going more like that, because, you know, it's a painful thing. It's really, really painful. Anyway, I say these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
I wanted to tell you about my journey this year. It's a journey of celebration since last conference I was here. My name is Brent Train. I post on postmormon.org as Mater 7854. Maybe some of you have seen it, but It's been an incredible year. First off, my other sister got married to a non-member guy, got divorced last year. So both my sisters now married to non-members, which is great because our family's coming together in ways that is incredible. My dad was able to walk his daughter down the aisle to marriage for the first time. And I bawled the whole time. I thought it was so wonderful, and it is. Continuing on, they also got married themselves in California, my dad and his partner, Richard, and I'm so grateful for that as well. Because I've never known a better couple anywhere than my two fathers and my two dads, and they are to me. And so you have this church that says they're non-political. Yet they make these kind of phone calls trying to stop such a beautiful union as my two dads. It's just so wrong. But I'm really excited for the journey that's happening. Families come together in ways that I wouldn't have dreamed about. And it was really great to be able to actually relax with my family, have a few beers at the wedding, and really just enjoy being together as a family and being myself. So I wanted to report that, and it's going to be a great conference, guys. Thanks.
I've got my shoes off because I'm standing on sacred ground. This ground is my ground. I'm a woman with power. I'm a woman who can make up my own mind. I'm a woman who's been shunned by my children. My husband doesn't understand. And I'm a woman who can't back down because I think that women have been put into second place for so long, and I refuse to be there anymore. I totally refuse it. I went to help with the petition today, and they had envelopes with the petition in, and I just went up and took one, and I got Thomas S. Monson. He's my least favorite of all. I hate his fairy stories and stuff like that. His stories about mothers and widows that he's helped. And so it was really gratifying, and I just held it right in front of the camera so they could see which one I was giving. But I just felt this tremendous urge to come up here because I haven't borne my testimony in such a long time. And I want to ask you a question. How many of you came out in 2006? Out of the church in 2006. Yeah, yeah. Sorry about that, guys. Do you know, it was a great year. In our ward, we came down from Alberta, Canada, and in our ward, there were four of us in the space of about 2 months that left the ward, and it left them absolutely reeling. They just don't know what hit them. And there have been other people since. And I was speaking to a young man earlier, and he obviously is an iconoclast like me. He just wants to break down the walls of deceit and power that these people have over us. And I do too. And I just said to my husband not very long ago, what makes you think that your testimony is any stronger than mine? What makes you think that you're right and that I'm wrong? Because he thinks that I've come to false conclusions. And he said, the Holy Ghost. And I said, well, how do you know that the Holy Ghost didn't tell me that the church was false? And he didn't have any answer for that, you know? And it's a lie because I don't believe in the Holy Ghost, but kind of lost my argument there. But I just wanted to have this chance to stand up here and see all of you and tell you how wonderful it is to be a strong and a proud woman and to take back my power and to stand on my own feet and say, hey, I can do things, and I can, and I will. Aunt Chad, I'm with you. I'm going to do it.
It's great to be here. This is my fifth year, and it's just an inspiration. I'm Arza Evans, and thank you so much. That was wonderful. I appreciate that so much. I'm a retired economics professor. It's so nice to be around intelligent, courageous people who see things the same way I do. You know, that I'm not nuts or something. Anyway, I come from a very strong Mormon family. In fact, when my father went on his second mission, Spencer W. Kimball and I were the speakers at that farewell. I wrote a book here, and I hope that each of you that signed up for the conference, that registered for the conference, will get a complimentary copy. I want you to have a complimentary copy of that book. It took about 20 years to do the research for this, and I was all by myself. I'm the only one in my family that is no longer active in the church. There are about 600 references here. I did a lot of work for you. If you don't want to read 26 volumes, if you don't want to read the 26 volumes of the Journal of Discourses, you don't have to. I can tell you where Brigham Young was taking wives and children away from one man who wouldn't go on a mission and give them to another, just like Jeff's down in southern Utah, exactly what he's doing there. And the references are footnoted. You can find them. Most of them actually come out of church books. The first part of this book is presents overwhelming scientific evidence that the Book of Mormon is a fraud, that it is not authentic. This DNA that they've been talking about is only the tip of the iceberg. There are many, many other scientific proofs that the Book of Mormon is not authentic. The second half of the book has to do with the immoral and illegal and mean activities of Joseph Smith and Brigham Young. All documented. For example, many people do not know that the President of the United States issued a warrant for the arrest of Joseph Smith for high treason. I'll just read that to you. Sir, you stand accused of high treason. You will deliver yourself up to the governor of Springfield, Illinois, in order to be tried before the Supreme Court of the United States next term. The governor of Illinois will be directed to take you in custody, and if you do not deliver yourself up, the president will deliver a proclamation against you. Signed, John Tyler, President of the United States. That's just one example of the outlaw activities. The Zion's camp was illegal. What if, and the Nauvoo Legion, what if the Baptists and the Presbyterians and the Methodists and the Catholics all had a private army, for hell's sakes? What would happen in our... It's very well documented here in the book about the deception that took place. The deception about polygamy, the deception about the Mountain Meadows Massacre, the deception about the Mormon Battalion. The whole concept of the Mormon Battalion is phony. Brigham Young requested that the government take 1,000. They didn't want them. They finally gave in to 500, but they paid the money up front. They never saw the money. And then Brigham Young said, well, they forced this on us. They did not. Why didn't they fight? Why didn't they lose anybody? Because the army didn't want them. And they refused to integrate them into the army because they didn't think they were trained or even patriotic. And that's all documented here in the book. And that is from B.H. Roberts, the church historian. Let me just take a second here and say I think it's very important that we don't take ourselves too seriously and that we keep our sense of humor. I'd like to just leave you quickly with a little humor. There was a Christian missionary in Africa. He wasn't doing too well, so he decided to go down the river a little ways. He talked the native into taking him in his boat down the river, provided he'd teach him some English going down. So they got in the boat, and they started out, and the Christian missionary pointed to the water and said, river, wiver, that's right, saw a tree, twee. Mm-hmm. They went around a corner, and there was a couple right there on the bank having sex. And so the missionary was very embarrassed, and so he pointed over and there and he said, man riding bicycle. The native took a dart gun, phew, sent an art, hit the guy in the back. The guy fell over dead. The missionary said, why'd you do that? Man riding my bicycle. Then they got down to the river to the new village, and they'd only been there about a month. And one of the chief's wives had a light-skinned baby, so he was going to kill a missionary. He says, "Wait a minute! I've only been here a month. I don't care. You're the only one here with white skin, and I'm going to kill you." The missionary didn't know what to do, so he said, "Well, before you do that, let me talk to you a little bit." So they took him out. And saw a herd of sheep, and he says, now look, these are white sheep, but once in a while, there's a black sheep comes out of there. So the chief says, okay. He says, you keep quiet about the black sheep, and I'll keep quiet about the white baby.
How do you follow that? Good Lord. This is kind of hanging by a thread. Can I rectify the situation? Do you mind? Pick the other one up? All right. Oh, this is awkward. Hi, my name's Chris Zabriskie. I've already been asked a bunch of times, so just so you don't have to ask me again. Yes, I'm related to the Zabriskie family that you personally know. No, I don't know them. Unless they're... there's a few Zabriskies that I'm related to. But I'm from Orlando, Florida. I'm here with Ray Messagey. You started when I... right after I went to the bathroom, so I don't know if he was first or not, but that's my grandfather, and we're both ex-Mormons now. I guess I'm sixth generation Pioneer blood, first generation father to a second generation ex-Mormon, and at least three, but still. I'm from Orlando, Florida. We're dealing with Amendment 2 down there, which gay marriage is already illegal, but they're wanting to get rid of rights for domestic partners of either sex at this point, just to... I don't know. I just pour lemon juice, I guess, on the cut. So I know the church is somewhat active in that. But thank you guys for all the work that you've been doing here. I think that's fantastic. Not a whole lot to say except to introduce myself, and I'm really happy to be here. I left 3 years ago, basically, of my own volition. My parents don't talk to me very much anymore as a result.
and not even many of my friends. But I could not be happier with my decision. I guess, yeah, absolutely. I guess my my aha moment after years of, you know, doubts and not dealing with the culture, you know, dear Heavenly Father, please bless the donuts. It's like, really? We're blessing the donuts at this point? But it was actually going through the endowment and the Washington anointing are weird enough, but walking up the stairs of the Orlando Temple and seeing people come down the stairs from the endowment in full garb at that point, which of course they don't tell you about in advance, and really just going, forgive me, but going, wow, that's really fucked up. I apologize for the vulgarity, but that's exactly what went through my mind and under my breath in the Orlando Temple. Holy cow, really? And there's something really wrong, and turned out to be right. And as you know, it doesn't take a whole lot of time or research. But yeah, keep on. Be brave, be courageous. It's tough. It's hard. It's weird. For me, being completely, very much raised, very devout in the church, to sort of in over the course of 6 months maybe have the way you look at the world turned literally, you know, 180 degrees. Is fascinating, but also beautiful. And you lose people, you find out who your real friends are, who your real family is. But overall, it's completely worth it. So thank you. Thank you to everybody who's posted on the ex-Mormon boards over the last, you know, 3 years, especially back in 2006. It's amazing to have Richard Packham in the room, for example. The amount of stuff that was out there was just wonderful. I'm starting to ramble. Basically, thank you. Pleasure to be here. It's amazing to see it. And it's amazing how happy and wonderful and nice everybody is. They tell you that you're happiest with the gospel. You're the happiest people on earth. Bullshit. This is great. Thank you very much.
Hi there. My name is Michelle Long. I'm from Riverside, California, and it is an honor to be here today. I'm extremely grateful for my daughter, Jamie, that getting your children out after so indoctrinating them and leading them to believe that they are doing the right thing. Being here in the temple 19 years, and so knowing what I did was a big undertaking. I realized that day when I woke up, I was 38 years old, 5 years ago, I looked at the man next to me and saying, not only did I not like him, I didn't love him. I married him to get to the celestial kingdom. And I remember that wedding night thinking to myself, oh my God, what have I got myself into? As he sat there and literally abused me for 4 hours. It took a lot of courage to come out. My dad is Jewish. My mother opened the freaking door for those idiots that And my dad said, I can't remember the day, I'm not giving up coffee, I'm not giving up my cigarettes, I'm not giving up my alcohol. I remember the day he did, and he got baptized. He got baptized a couple months before I did, and I got baptized. And it only lasted a couple months for him, but my mom had us in, so we stayed in. And I held it near and dear to my heart. And I stayed in the marriage just like a lot of you did, because I didn't want to fail. I stayed in that church because what if it was right and I was wrong? I stayed in that marriage because I didn't want to be looking bad to my friends because all their marriage in my eyes was working and mine wasn't. So I became the best fake, the best facade of a person you could ever imagine. I know I'm looking at each of you and you know about that facade, that fake, you know, looking at everybody being their friend, and I could care less about their kids on a mission, the temple marriages, who the hell they made casseroles for, how many cookies they baked, and how I didn't measure up. It just didn't matter to me anymore. I said, fuck it. And you know what? I came out of that marriage. It finalized May 14, 2004. I met some guy on the internet July of 2004, and he's a bad boy. And let me tell you, I married him in November because I couldn't have sex before I was married still. I was married 2 weeks. I was married 2 weeks, and it was amazing. Because I had been abused for 19 years. And I know what it takes to make a relationship. And I'm really open to having that in my life now. It took me 5 years to, like, pull my ass. Head out of my ass is pretty much what I'm going to say. Pull myself together and know that I was worth it. I'm worth it. We are each worth it. We deserve divine happiness here on earth. We don't have to do great works here on earth to get somewhere. We get to have it right now. It doesn't matter about our color. If we like the same sex, love the same sex, or who we're having sex with, we are worth it. We deserve to have happiness, joy, bliss. Follow our hearts. Step up to the plate. Be ourselves. Be true to us. Not live for another person. Not live for a bishop. I married my husband, my ex-husband, because a bishop brought me in his office and told me he believed this man was for me. And at the sweet age of 18, I was just turning 19. I married him when I was 19 years old. I didn't know who I was or what I wanted. But let me tell you, be there for your children, the ones that are really deserve our love and attention. I have a 10-year-old and 8-year-old. I have two in, 21 and 17 out, two out, 17 and 21, and two in, 8 and 10. And they need me. They need me to love and support them. I don't bash the church. I don't have anything against that church. They do their own thing. I do my own thing. Just leave me alone and let me be me. Let you be you. And let's embrace each other and buoy each other up. It isn't all about them against us against them. I don't care what they do. Just don't infringe your beliefs on mine. I know what I want. I know what works for my heart. I know what works for yours. And for our children, love, embrace them. My 8 and 10-year-old really have issues with me. You know, they're right. They're wrong. Mom, you're wrong. Dad's right. He's in the bishopric. Well, that's why it's called Bishop Prick. I know it. Get it? So thank you for listening to me. My name is Michelle Long. I would like to... Isn't that funny? Michelle Long. Michelle Long, Schlong, whatever. You'll remember me. You can call me Shell, Shelly, Michelle. I don't care. But I'd like to meet each and every one of you. And you know what? Okay. My saying in life, I'm in the Cybo Club. Strap your balls on. Cybo goes. Thanks for listening to me.
My name is Richard Harrington. I'm a tax attorney down in Utah County, down in the compound there. I actually really love Utah. We love to go to Lake Powell, take the horses down the desert and whatnot, and the neighbors are more intimidated about me than I am about them, so I'm fine. But I really don't want to talk quite so much about myself. It'll be intermingled there. But I want to pay tribute, since Chad started this out, as emphasizing the need to be courageous. And I want to talk about my cousin, Verlaine Tippetts Avery, who wrote Emma Smith, Mormon Enigma, along with a co-author. Now, when I was a teenager, I worked on my uncle's cattle ranch, and that was my cousin Valene's father. And so I became very well acquainted with her, and she was extremely active in the church. She'd been a Relief Society president of the ward and of the stake, and the church was her life. And as it was mine. I went on a mission, did my 2.5-year stint in Brazil, was a dedicated zone leader, district leader, all that kind of stuff, and all the offices thereafter. And she wrote the book. And I visited her one day, and she gave me a signed copy. Didn't say much about it. It had been kind of the chatter among family members. And I read it. And all I could say was, poor Valene. You know, that can't be true. That can't be true. Cognitive dissonance had taken over my soul, and I was not open to anything that was being written in that book. Well, it did, however, plant a seed, and you begin to hear things. And I thought, well, I'm going to put this to rest forever. You know, I'm going to do my own research. But I wanted to talk first of all about what happened to Valene. because the word got out that she was writing this book. And so the brethren, through the local leaders, began to put pressure on her not to publish the book through her husband, a great guy, a wonderful person. And so he started to put pressure on Valene. And to her credit, she says, no, this is true. People need to know this. We're talking about courage here. People need to know this. And so she went ahead and published the book anyway. Well, that cost her her marriage. When she published the book, her eldest son, Chris, was on a mission. And she was concerned, what's going to happen when my son comes fresh off his mission? All excited and overwhelmed with the Spirit, and finds out that his mother has written this book. I asked her about that, and she said, well, I really didn't say anything to him. They're extremely bright people. She was an extremely intelligent woman. She passed away a few years ago. But he came back, and in discussion with his two brothers and his sister, they did their own research, and all of them left the church. Which was pretty darn exciting. Now, having gone from the point of looking at my cousin as being possessed by Satan to practically worshiping the ground she walked on, recognizing the magnificent courage that that took for her to do that. And it was one of the greatest days in my life when I said, Valene, sit here. I want to talk to you. I want to tell you how grateful I am, how impressed I am with the courage that you have evidenced, the intelligence, the character, the fortitude. And I was probably the only one in the family, extended family, we go back all the way to Joseph Smith, who had arrived at that conclusion. And she was just relieved to have somebody close that she loved and that loved her that could say, yeah, what you did was right, it was courageous, it was a magnificent thing. Well, I started to do the research because I was certain I was going to find that none of that stuff was true. You know, it doesn't take that long to find the information, but when you are so indoctrinated, so enslaved, it was very hard to accept. Thousands of pages, many books, and finally, as an attorney, the highest level of proof is beyond a reasonable doubt, and I reached that point beyond any reasonable doubt whatsoever, that Joseph Smith was a total fraud, and worse. Well, I lived with one foot in and one foot out for years. And I went through a divorce, only partially related to that, but remarried, and we were going to church all the time, and the gag reflex was constantly going off in meetings, And finally, I can't live with this anymore. You know, there's one person you have to be true to, and that's yourself. And if everybody else has to fall by the wayside, that doesn't mean you have to commit mass carnage with relationships. But being sincere and true and informed really gets you a long ways down the road. Anyway, my wife offices next door, and she was one of the queens in the Relief Society. She was teaching gospel doctrine. And I walked in there, and I just thought, I got to throw out a couple of things to at least get her attention, you know. I said, it really, really bothers me. I was out. But it really, really bothered me. I told her that Joseph Smith was out marrying other men's wives and having sex with them. I said, that doesn't really measure up anyway. Go have sex with them, but don't do it in the name of God, you know. And anyway, and I said, it really bothers me as an attorney that the church is penalizing people for telling the truth. I said, that really, really bothers me. And she said, just like I did, that can't be true. That can't be true. To her credit, she did the research, and all of her kids were inactive except her son, and I pretty much raised him, and he was going to church with us. But one day, she came in my office with tears, and none of her daughters were active, with tears streaming down her face, saying, Richard, I am so ashamed of myself that I could have ever permitted any organization to come between me and my children. And that relationship, because she was looking at her kids through the grind of this, of the Mormonism. They'll never make the celestial kingdom. They can't possibly be happy. Now they have the most beautiful, wonderful relationship. It is just a pleasure to behold. And life is so good. It is so exciting. There's so much to learn. I've had some casualties among family members. Not that I insisted on that. Not that I was argumentative. But they can't handle it. It is frightening. I still love them. I still tell them so. You don't need to go out and be argumentative, just informed and sincere. And life goes on, and it's great, and it is wonderful. There's so much to learn. I'm grateful for a lot of people here. My wife read Richard Packham's story, and she's, man, that's really good. That's sincere. You know, I just appreciate it. And we don't need to be obnoxious. You know, we can be loving and caring and informed, and that's how people will listen. If I hadn't read Valene's book, if she hadn't had the courage, I wouldn't know what it's really like to be happy. I'm not a member of a little organization. I'm a member of humanity. That's a much better deal. And we have a great group of people. Intelligent, brave, courageous people. I'm impressed with that constantly. This is where I'd rather be. And we don't need to be selective. Anyway, my time's up. He says stop right here. Thank you very much.
This is a perfect time to mention something. About a year and a half ago, I met Valene's brother, who was going to participate in the conference last year in our art show and wasn't able to do it. But he emailed me about 3 or 4 months ago and told me that he thought he could be able to get some of the first editions of her book that were still in her home. She passed away very unexpectedly 2 years ago. He was going down to help kind of clear out the home and finally, you know, put some of her things in storage and so forth. So part of our raffle tomorrow are 2 or 3 copies of first edition brand new books of Emma. This is the book that turned the corner for me. It was a long time after I read it that I finally left, but this was the book that I read that said to me, something is wrong. Something is drastically wrong. And so it's always been a very important book to me. Also, I would like to turn the time over for just a minute to Tom, who would like to say a few words about someone who has passed away recently that was part of our community for several years.
Get over getting cut in line. You got over the church. It's no big deal. I do feel somewhat obligated this evening to mention, as Sue has mentioned, we lost one of our Exmos down in Arizona. And it came unexpectedly and without warning. And Karen Frost, who is on our DVD, gave up the mortal frame a few weeks ago. I'm the kind of guy that tries to find something good in anything, make something positive out of it. And I thought, as we gathered as Exmos with our first loss like this, the significant thing that popped out at me, and I shared it with our group, I didn't expect until I was there at that moment, was nobody was repeating the pablum. Nobody was regurgitating the pat phrases we've all heard. People were actually grieving as they wanted. And if any gift Karen gave us in her loss of her life, it was new life. She exists on the DVD. She exists on YouTube right now. Whether she exists beyond that, I don't know. And it's okay not to know. And we're free as a result of that. I would just take one moment for silence in Karen's name, and I'll turn the time over to the next speaker. Thank you.
Hello. My name is Craig Pitzmer, and I had heard about this conference, but I didn't exactly know when it was. I was at the thing today at handing in the signatures to the church leadership. I formally resigned from the church in February. They finally got the letter out to me about 3 weeks ago. But that was what I wanted to just say that, along with Jean, that as a gay man in the church, I know what it is to be a second-class citizen and to suffer for years being told that I am not as good as anyone else. That. No. And I know that now. And it took me pretty much 23 and a half years to realize that everything that I'd been taught was wrong. That I can't even, I wasn't going to get up, but I told myself I had to, because once I came out of the closet and came out of the church, I told myself that I had to be a voice for those who are still there and who are, I did not want to cry because every time I bore my testimony, I cried too. But, what are you going to do? I'm gay. I have feelings. There are so many people who are in the church right now, people just like me, who are about ready to kill themselves because they have been taught since the second they were born that if you're not straight, if you're not white, if you're not male, you're no good. And that, I promised myself that no matter what, I would be a voice for those who can't, because I didn't have any voice. I grew up not knowing a single gay person until I was 22. Not knowing that there were so many people, not just gay, but had so many doubts about the church. And today I went and I delivered Henry Eyring's letter. Whether he reads it or not, I doubt he ever will. But it was so gratifying to be there. A year ago, I was at BYU. A little over a year ago, I left BYU, but I was struggling so hard to have the courage, as we've talked about, to come out to my family, both as gay and as not believing in the church, let alone being an agnostic. And I've lost a lot. I've lost a relationship with my parents. I've been forbidden to speak to my siblings. My sister, who's at BYU, has, after I went and spoke with her, and you know, spoke at length with her for hours, she goes and joins a pro Prop 8 group on Facebook, and then tells me why I should be okay with that. That she doesn't want me to have rights. And at the same time, I've made so many friends, and I do have family members, cousins, who, though they grew up in the church and are still members and believe it, and yet they have realized that there is something wrong, and that they refuse to treat me like my parents and their parents treat me. And that has been something that has really helped me. But I just want to say that I'm preaching to the choir here, but I can't even express how devastating it was to grow up in the church, gay, and have tried tried to do everything I could to be straight, and have nothing ever work because it's not possible to become straight if you're gay. And to finally, after 23 years, to in a year have my entire life turn around, to not only be proud of who I am, but to be able to stand here and be able to express all these things that were there forever and I could never say, because I was so afraid, I was so ashamed, I was everything that you've all have been. And I'm so grateful to have a community, because for about 6 months I didn't have anyone and I was alone. And just thank you to all of you.
My name is Melanie Whitteberg, and originally when I moved up to the front row, it was because my glasses are broken and I couldn't see all of you and I wanted to be able to connect. But when I sat here, something very interesting happened. I remembered being at a funeral of a friend of mine about 6 years ago that died from a heroin overdose. And his family couldn't wait to just put him in the ground. It had nothing to do with honoring the person that he was or the life that he had had before he struggled with those difficulties. And a few years later, I was at another funeral of a great man who also struggled with difficulties with alcoholism. And he had separated from his family because of those differences. And yet, he'd become part of my family because I was a bartender. And we sat at his funeral, and they said, "Does anyone want to say a few words?" And none of us from our other family were ready to stand up. And I remember being at my previous friend's funeral, and no one tributed him. No one gave him the honor and the respect that he deserved. And in that moment, I was caught off guard. I was shocked by that. And so when Reed was buried, I was able to stand up and give tribute to the man that I knew, the person, the generous, big-hearted, warm person that I knew. And I sat here tonight and I thought, you know, this is an opportunity not to wait until you're at someone's funeral to give gratitude and appreciation. Because Chad and Melanie Spute saved my life. I've been in Davis County for 4 years. I've been out of the church for 20. And I sat on my driveway with my little girls waving to our neighbors, and they would point and look the other way. I'd go to school and I'd try to talk to the moms and they'd stare at my shoulders like they were boobs. And I would say, "It's just a shoulder, you know." I've often dreamed there'd be some sort of weird porno we could make about men ogling shoulders instead of, you know. Anyway, and I went to, I literally was in the depths of despair. I was isolated. I was ostracized. I had been told by the Relief Society lady that, they went back to the church and told them, because I didn't want to be Mormon, that I didn't want anything to do with anyone who was Mormon, which was absolutely not true. And I was depressed. I fell into a really deep depression. And the only thing I found solace in was books. I found those books, and I read Martha Beck's book, Leaving the Saints, Finding My Faith. Love that book. I just dove into books. Well, one day I'm at the Davis County, the Layton Library, and there's a poster that says, "Calm, Community After Leaving Mormonism." And I stood there in public and I sobbed, because I'd been out 20 years and had been telling myself as many times as I could that I was not broken. Just because I couldn't fit in that church didn't mean I was broken. And so I called and I said, "I'm going to come to this meeting, okay?" And I got this message back, "Okay, come please, it'll be fine." Lo and behold, Melanie and I went to high school together. And since then, it's been a speedy recovery, because I have been welcomed into their home and into their family. And I just am not going to wait until we're at that point where everybody's paying their respects to tell you, Chad and Melanie, how much I honor and respect you for your bravery and your courage. Thank you.
My name is Mark. I'd like to bear my testimony. I'm sorry. I had to do it. That's all I wanted to say. I never had grandparents. They were passed before I came around. Richard, you kind of became, you don't remember me. It's okay. It was 10 years ago. I still have the emails. And I remember reading your stuff and going, oh, it was amazing. And then I did the ultimate sin. I went and saw Sandra Tanner. And I could only imagine, like, you know, served a mission and all of those things, that she would be like this devil woman, and she would draw me in like this seductress, or maybe I hoped that. I don't know. It was, yeah. Yes. But so when people come and see me here in Utah now, if they're Mormon or not, I ask them to come in with me with Sandra, and I say, before we go, I said, can you feel things? I mean, can you get a sense of a room? Can you feel the spirit or the lack of love or hatred in a place? And they're like, yeah, I get that. I said, well, when you go in there, take a deep breath and tell me what you feel. I mean, do you feel contention or anger? And so those were big things for me. So thank you, Richard. I'd like to get a picture with you later. Grandpa. So... When I came back from my mission, I was on a fast track. I served in the original mission of the church, and that was very big. And then I came back and worked for a Mormon congressman, and then I became a seminary and institute teacher. And so I was ready and going, and then I started asking questions. And there's just so much to say, but let me just jump back a little bit. An irony of ironies. My parents were, I was raised in a hippie van until I was, I went from a hippie van to being a sunbeam, I swear to God. I kid you not, we have the picture of me in the hippie van, and then a picture of me as a sunbeam. And I've got sandals on, and you got the beard, right? I mean, and so my parents, they were starting a commune in Texas, and they decided to leave because it was the early 70s and there was, you know, open marriage, group marriage, you know, just open sexuality and everything. And they didn't want to be a part of that. I can definitely appreciate that. And then when I got divorced and I met with my bishop, I said, well, how do I get a temple divorce? And he said, we don't do that. And I, what? No, you just get another one. And so I confirmed this with a friend, and she had had the similar experience. And this was 1999. 3 days before they were to get married, a man I know had to go to his new bride and say, oh, by the way, you're going to be a second wife for all eternity. And so the irony of ironies is my parents joined the church to get away from wife swapping. Okay? And here I am going... okay, this doesn't make any sense to me. And so I had some traumatic experiences happen with my family. And so I went back to Texas to be around them. And as I was traveling back from Mexico, I met a guy. We were actually camping across from Bush's ranch. Do you remember those, Sidney Sheehan? Okay, that was me. We were there and with the shotguns and everything aimed at us. And we were coming back and we started talking. And it turns out that commune, his brother started it. And so in 2007, I was welcomed home. And so I was able to live for a year in that experience, off the grid, underground, a house, I swear to God, the back half of it is made out of champagne bottles. No personal use. So, I guess there's just so many things that I want to say. I've never said publicly this. I'm not coming out, by the way. I feel like 5 years ago, my brother passed away. He was one of those 200 of the flowers that were delivered from suicide. He was the Eagle Scout, the self-taught classical pianist, the age of 16, performing on ESPN. But he was the all-American kid, but he just wasn't good enough. And I was, you know how you have that Zen moment after something like this happens and you go and smell flowers? Well, I was given a special moment that I didn't realize until I was saying this, that I went and picked my daughter up in Orem, and we literally stopped by the side of the road, and we're smelling flowers. And my cell phone rang, and it was my mom, and she said, sit down. And And so I was glad that my daughter was there, although she was freaked out because she was two. And why is Dad screaming? But there was that chance to know that we had a bonding moment, because that's exactly how my grandfather passed, smelling a flower. And I just can't help but think of all of these beautiful souls that have left. And I don't know where they've gone, because I don't believe in the Santa Claus God anymore, but I'm holding out for the Easter Bunny. Okay? So thank you.
My name's Wes, and first off, I'd like to say that I know the church is not true, and Joseph Smith is not a prophet. So I realized I had never said that publicly before. I had said the other thing years ago, lots of times, but just wanted to say that. So, yeah, I was raised in the church in Portland, Sue's hometown. And I guess we got a couple other Portlanders there, too. Awesome. Pretty devout family. My parents were converts. And, you know, just from a really early age, I just it just wasn't sitting with me. I hated church, just bored out of my mind. Just really didn't like it. And a kid came up to me when I was probably third grade or so, pretty young, and asked me how many moms I had. Portland's not a big Mormon community, and I had never heard of this, you know, as a third grader, and I'm like, I have one. And went home and asked my dad about it, and of course got the standard answer, well, you know, the church did that a long time ago, and you're too young to understand that. Well, maybe someday you'll understand it later when you're older. You know, from that age, I think that was where my first doubts came in. I was just like, I don't know about that. And as I got older, you know, more questions came up. The racist stuff, all of that. And was like, okay, so at one point you guys are saying this is okay, and now it's not okay. Well, why was it ever okay, you know? So that was kind of my beginning of the end for me. And probably around 13, 14, I just basically told my parents, you know what, I'm not buying this, I'm not into it, and I'm really not going to participate in it anymore. But, of course, my dad said, well, you will participate in it until you're 18, because it's my duty to God to see to it that you do. Of course, that pissed me off. And, you know, I proceeded to do pretty much everything they told me not to do. Just because they told me not to. Did that for a while. That eventually wore off. Didn't really find a whole lot of satisfaction in that stuff, and realized that I was only doing it as a reaction to what I was told not to do. So anyway, long story short, that was years ago. I did come to the Ex-Mormon Conference in 1998. I don't know if anyone else was at that conference in Las Vegas at the time. I know Richard was, it was quite an experience, and we had a good time. But I finished up my master's in counseling last year. My desire is to start some type of center of some kind where people who've left cults, not necessarily just Mormonism, there's lots of them out there where I think similar feelings are there for people. I'm not sure what it would look like at this point, but I heard Steve Hassan was speaking at this conference and thought that would be a good one to go to. And if there's anyone else here that has any interest in that or anything along those lines, I would love to speak with them later. So, yeah, that's it.
Those that are sitting up here, that'll have to be the end of it because it is getting kind of late.
My name is Micah, and this is my first year here. Thought I'd share my story because it's kind of the opposite of what most people hear. Most people find out, or they start researching the church because of their doubts, and so they go and research it and find out, hey, there's nothing to hold it up. So, been out of the church, I guess, technically since August 1st, that's when I sent my resignation letter. But I left the church emotionally on May 30th, and that morning I was at TBM, and I came home from work that day and told my wife, I'm getting new garments, or new underwear, I mean. That was a shock to her, probably. I didn't think that through, but luckily, being the lovely person she is, she said, that's okay, that's your thing, you can do that. Anyway, so how I left the church is I started getting into some of that, all the conspiracy theories out there about 9/11 and world or, New World Order and all that stuff. And I guess what that served to do more than anything was open my mind to all the different possibilities out there, and also the possibility that maybe you don't need us, we don't, that we are divine beings ourselves, we don't need a savior, we don't need a religion or somebody else to take our power away. And when I came to that realization, it was like the most liberating free thing I've ever felt. Sorry, I'm emotional, and this is how you would see me on a Sunday testimony meeting. But I realized how great it is to, and how, I don't even know what to say because there's no words for it. Anyways, so that's how I left the church. I was online reading lots of stuff and came to across a forum that was into this free thinking stuff and was told that we don't need a savior. And that just felt right to me. I know you don't like the idea of going off feelings, or some people don't anyways, but it led me out of the church, and I'm grateful for that. And 2 weeks later, after I got rid of my garments and whatnot, I went to the RFM website and discovered why it wasn't true. And so that just confirmed me, yes, I am following what's true for me. And I think that's what this life is about. We each have our own truth, and we're living to our fullest if we're following our inner truth and our own self, what's true to us, because we are powerful beings. And we can achieve whatever we want. Nobody else can tell you you can't do something. And amen.
Hi, my name is Mason. I drove down from Boise, Idaho. It's really good to see everybody. And everybody listening. How many people do we have? No. I'm sure there's probably like at least 5,000, right? So all 5,000 of you, we don't forget about you. But really, that's like 20 people at each connection, right? There's a lot of people. So kind of lost my train of thought. It's kind of been the perfect day. I mean, not that you can't have just one perfect day, and you can have plenty, which is one thing I learned after I left the church. But I had something. Bear with me. So I was really glad that I was able to make it to the handing off of the delivery of the petition. There's been several points throughout my elementary school and middle school raising education where teachers would kind of ask us this question, and I never really had a good answer for it. It came up usually around history or about the subject of history. During the civil rights movement, what is it that makes people, you know, racist versus what makes the heroes that stand out? Like, what is it that actually made people kind of look beyond what was there? And actually, I think if I was in the church back in the 50s and 60s, I would have been a racist. Like, I don't want to sound bad, but I probably would have just followed the madding crowd. Like, and I'm so glad that I have that clear, able mind to question that. I guess that's all I really had to say. Thanks everyone who's helped to organize this. It's going to be a great weekend. I look forward to it.
Brethren and sisters, we welcome you to the temple and hope you will find joy in serving in the house of the Lord this day. For each of you here to receive your own endowment, you should have been washed, anointed, and clothed in the garment of the holy priesthood. For those of you representing deceased persons, you're certifiably insane. So began my business trip to Atlanta last weekend. I sat with a coworker at dinner and who had been raised in Utah her entire life and never knew a thing about the Mormons, and she started to ask a few questions, and more questions, more questions. Ended up spending till 11:30 in my hotel room taking her through an endowment ceremony. And for those of you that have been in an endowment ceremony or raised in it, you should have seen the look on her face. Oh my God. It's a wonderful position to be in, to have knowledge of the church and to be able to share that in an objective way and to let people see the depth to which the church will make you believe such bizarre things and make you feel comfortable with having your boundaries violated and with having your family ripped apart. Father's Day of this year, I sat on a road in Vidor, Texas, with my wife and my two daughters, and my world came crashing down. My wife looked at me and told me everything that was wrong with me in our marriage. And I felt 30 years of self-denial and self-loathing well up in me as I stared straight ahead out the window, heading southbound, ready to go on I-10. And I finally looked at her and said, I hate myself when I'm around you. And as the words flew back and forth with my two little ones sitting in the back of the van, my seven-year-old looked at me and said, please, Daddy, don't leave us. And I turned to her and I said, no matter what happens here, I will never leave you. August 1st, I walked into my girl's room and I went to my five-year-old and she was getting ready to go to sleep. I just ran my fingers through her hair and kissed her goodnight, tucked her in, and then I went to my seven-year-old and I kissed her and I tucked her in. And then I moved out. Drove to my apartment in Salt Lake City, curled up in the fetal position, and cried myself to sleep for the next 2 weeks. And I have taken the American dream and slit its throat. I have walked away from everything that I was told was meaningful and worthwhile. And I can stand before all of you today and say, I did it with a clear conscience. It was the right decision. And despite the fact that my world's been turned upside down, I am happy. And I am grateful for the examples that I have seen here tonight. I am amongst an incredible group of people. We learned in Mormonism that there were noble and great ones, and I see them here tonight. I've kind of adopted a new anthem, so to speak. I was introduced to a fun musical within the last year called Wicked, and there's a song there called Defying Gravity in that collection. And at the end of the song, kind of crescendos and, you know, Broadway-style bravado, and there's a line that says, and if I'm flying solo, at least I'm flying free. To those who ground me, take a message back from me, tell them that I'm defying gravity. And nobody in all of Oz, no wizard that there is or was, is ever going to bring me down. They're never going to bring us down. Thank you.
Hey, man. My name is Steve Motley. I'm from Danville, Virginia. This is my sixth year being here. And I want to commend, first of all, every one of you who are here for the first time. So let me have a round of applause for everybody here for the first time. This is exactly where you're supposed to be at this time. And I can say that because, you know, I was born and raised in the church. My parents joined the church 6 months before I was born. So I didn't really have much of a choice. You know, I had great parents, and I always tried to please them and do what they told me. When I was 17 years old, I graduated from high school, and I wasn't old enough to go on a mission, so I did the next best thing. I went in the Marine Corps. I figured, hey, I can do 3 years in the Corps, get my GI Bill, and then I'll be 19. I'll be, you know, just having turned 19. I was 20, actually. I was an old guy when I went on my mission. Went to Switzerland for a couple years. But I think my apostasy actually started right before I went on my mission. My dad had been a bishop for 7 years, and I was getting ready to go to the temple, and he was preparing me as best as a bishop can for that experience. And I know most of you know what I'm talking about. And, you know, I read a couple books, and so I was really, I thought I was prepared spiritually for the temple experience. And I get in there, and I was completely lost, and I came out scratching my head like a monkey with a Rubik's Cube. And through the years, I kept trying to figure out the Mormon temple ceremony, the endowment ceremony. Guess what? Nobody gets it. And, you know, the bishop and the stake president, they used to say, you need to fast and pray more. You need to read the scriptures more. You just need to, you know, really get into it. And sooner or later, it'll break open and you'll know what's going on. Never happened. Never happened. And, you know, I did everything I was supposed to do. I did the mission, got married in a temple, raised 5 beautiful kids, and had just retired from the Marine Corps and was living up in Portland. And I met this little blonde-haired lady here. She hates it when I tell the story, but I met Sue Emmett, and at the time she was just about ready to leave the church. And at that time I was, you know, total, what do you call it, TBM, total believing Mormon. So I met with Sue because I was going to try to save her soul. Well, shortly thereafter, she says, you know, you need to go down to Roseburg, Oregon and meet this fellow named Richard Packer. So Sue and I went down. Richard, you remember the day you and your lovely wife fixed a beautiful lunch. That, what I learned that day, I mean, here was a guy who was an accomplished attorney. Er spricht Deutsch, out me. He speaks German. He went on a mission to Germany, I believe. He studied in German, but I know we spoke a little German. And it was just amazing. And so that was the beginning. And it was a tough battle. A couple weeks later, I went back to Sue, and I said, I don't know what this is you're telling me. She had given me the book over there by The Secret, the one on the end. What's the name of it? Mormon? Yeah, that was the book she gave me to read. And I went through that thing like, you know, knife through hot butter, and I just couldn't believe what I was seeing and hearing. I'm going, wow, why didn't I pick up on this stuff before? You know? But I went back to Sue. I got scared, and I thought, man, you know, my family's not going to buy this. So I went back to her, and I said, shame on you for telling me all that negative stuff. I don't believe a bit of it. But then I put it all into context, and I thought about what Richard and his wife had told me, and then I did more and more reading. And finally, I came to the conclusion that, like most of you here, it's a complete fabricated sham. You know, when you've lived your whole life with your ladder leaning against the wrong wall, you know, when you come out of that, you go, what's next? Well, I figured that, you know, I was going to find me another church. So I got me one of those 3-ring binder notebooks, and I started going to different Christian churches. Well, after about the 30th one, I said, to hell with this. It's all man-made. You know, but I'll tell you, I have never experienced, I kind of lost my family a little bit in the process, but at Christmas, I flew up to Alaska to visit my kids. And my 3 youngest daughters, they picked me up at the airport. We were driving back to Wasilla, Alaska. And on the way, my daughter said, Dad, we've got an announcement to make. And I said, well, you know, thinking, oh, Lord, what are they going to say? And they said, well, we have decided that the Mormon church is not true, and we're not going back again. My 3 youngest. Yeah. But now my oldest son and my oldest daughter, they're in Boise. Where's that young man from Boise? I want to talk to you. You got to get a hold of my son. Because he became the patriarch. See, when Dad left the church, my son buckled down, became the patriarch. You know, now he's the stalwart one, right? But I got these 2 little grandsons, and they don't want me around them because they're afraid some of my, you know, beliefs will rub off on them. Y'all know what I mean? Is that right in there? But anyway, I'm taking enough time. Richard, I got 1 minute. Okay. But I just want to tell you that, again, this is the exact right place for all of you. And I hope each one of you will come back every year. It's a highlight for me. I don't need to be here. You know what I'm saying? I think I've learned as much as I can. And I've reached a comfort zone with where I'm at spiritually and where I'm going. But every time I come back here, meeting people like Richard and Sue and seeing new faces, it's what makes it all. Arza. I'm going to point you out, Arza Evans. Arza is a wonderful soul. I met him 6 years ago. We came here the first time together 6 years ago. And Arza's book, The Keystone of Mormonism, played a major role in my understanding of why we are all here today. And I challenge every one of you to read Arza's book. It's amazing. Thank you, Arza, for what you've done. So thank you all very much.
Well, I come to find out I'm the closer, which I don't have a lot of things to say. But this is my second year here. Last year, my wife drugged me here, and I was kind of, I've never been really a member of the church, you know, but I tried to fit in for a long time. And my wife came from a very religious background, and she's hot, so I wanted to follow her. So for years, I adapted, went through the temple, did all the stuff, and finally made it into the church, you know. And for me to even be standing up here and telling you this, I wasn't the type of person that would stand up at testimony meeting and bear my testimony, but I feel real strong about what I'm telling you tonight. Well, let me jump back. But a little over a year and a half ago, my wife were sitting in Gospel Doctrine, and they started talking about the Kirkland Bank. And I just seen my wife just go red. She was mad. And I'm like, what? She's like, what is all this about? I can't believe this is going on. They're trying to make it sound all like it was no big deal, you know, and stuff. And my wife was furious. And so my wife has a father-in-law that had polygamous background, and so she was kind of angry about that too. And so roughly a year and a half ago, my wife kind of turned everything back around that I tried so hard to get into. And so I struggled a little bit. I was kind of brainwashed or what you will, and I fought her for a while. And we actually argued the whole way up to this conference last year. I just didn't feel we should be here, you know, still kind of brainwashed or whatever from what I had worked so hard to get to. But anyways, I could say the last 8 months has probably been the best feeling I've had religiously, not religiously, spiritually. It feels incredible. You know, and I've got a great story. You know, as I was going through all this struggling and issues, a lady at work who I think was on to what I was doing gave a great story. How many have heard these real great stories, you know, in the church and, you know, the spiritual stories? And it was a good one. It was about a book that came from Alpine. By the way, I'm from the compound, Utah County. About how a book, a Michael Jordan book that her son had actually, highlighted and wrote things in, it somehow made it to Africa to his mission. And how, and I was like, wow, that's incredible, you know? And so I was stumped, you know, once again, my mind's still struggling and having problems. So we went to a dinner with my mom a few nights later, who my wife actually drug out of the church too. And she's as happy as she can be. She was on the internet and wanted to buy some books, and one of them was Palmer's book, and I can't remember the other ones, but she chose the other book. And she says, this is the story she's telling me, and she goes, she lives way down in Mona, and she lives way away from anybody, and this is a real inspirational story, because she said that, yeah, that's a pretty good story, I told her. And she's like, wow, that is a good story, but I've got one better. And she says, I ordered this book on the internet, and I couldn't afford them both. And so the other one came, and I read that, and I hadn't ordered the other one. And my niece came in the door and said, Grandma, your dog is out tearing a book apart out in the front yard. And she goes, what? And she goes, I think it's a Book of Mormon. And my mom goes, well, I threw my Book of Mormon away a long time ago. And so she went out and got this book away from the dog, and it was this Palmer's book. And that was the most amazing thing to me, you know, that you hear of all this inspirational stuff, and that is the most inspirational thing I ever heard of. Beat that one. But I just couldn't, you know, like I say, I'm not much of a person to stand and do this, but I really wanted to stand for what I believed in and what I feel. Chad had mentioned standing up. You know, I've been kind of conservative about how I approach this in the compound. but people who know me are stumped. And I'm making, and my wife and I are making a difference in that area. People are just, what? They're still married and they've left the church, you know, and I know I'm getting attention, you know, and people who come to me definitely hear it. You know, if they try to preach me or send a missionary over or whatever, they hear it, you know. And so I encourage everybody to stand up. You know, this is very important, and it was important to me, and I hope that I can reach one person by standing up and talking. And I appreciate being here, and hopefully somebody else would stand up and close. Thanks.
It never ceases to amaze me, some of the stories we hear. Every time when I plan this, I think, you know, do we really want to do this mic time on Friday night? But there's always so many new people, and the stories are just, you know, amazingly honest and real. And that I think is the thing we take away from this, is that experience of people being able to get up and just be their authentic self. And I would like to close by saying, yes, we can. So that's it for tonight. Those who haven't been here before, in the room right around, you go out the lobby, and right next door is our hospitality room. There are drinks and snacks in there, and there's a contribution jar in there. If you feel like you can, put a little money in there, because the conference paid for the stuff that's in there. And we work on, not a total shoestring, but pretty close to it sometimes. So just want to remind you that our session tomorrow morning starts at 9:00, and please make every effort to be here on time. We'll see you later. Oh, Richard, did you need?
Hold on, wait a minute.
Hold on.
Give us 10 minutes up in the celestial room. That's room 9.
10 minutes?
No, give me 10 minutes.
He's going to die by the time I'm done.